Hello, you're listening to Bricks and Mortar. My guest today is Jay Das, partner in the planning team at law firm Wedlake Bell. Jay, thank you very much for joining me today. Jay, you have a huge wealth of experience in handling planning permissions. You've been able to draw all that experience together, and you've developed 5 tips for securing a planning permission, so some best guidance for people, and we're going to take a look at that today. The first step you've identified really is to keep it professional and to stay away from making it personal. Now, how do parties achieve that when I guess there's often an awful lot at stake?
That's right. I think anybody who has been involved in the planning process will know that it's an art form. There's no science particularly to it, despite the fact that there are planning guidance and planning legislation when it comes to individual applications, particularly the contentious ones. You really see emotions flaring up, be it from the landowners or the developers who want their schemes to go ahead, or be it from the residents who quite often don't want a particular scheme, whatever form that might be. And then, as it were, caught between those two traps are the planning authority planning officers. And you have to remember, the local authority officers are there as public servants. They don't actually have a vested interest as such. They don't benefit from a scheme, and equally they generally don't lose from a scheme. They are under, I suppose, an obligation to deliver schemes within their area under planning legislation. Obviously not all schemes, so they are the arbiters in terms of deciding who wins out insofar as the decision-making rests with the planning authority. And because these things can become so very emotive, you know, it's quite easy to lose your rag, as it were, with the officers and the planning authority, and from both sides of the fence, with the developers thinking it's either taking too long or it's too expensive, or that, you know, officers are not giving it the time it needs, and with the residents thinking that they've got an uphill battle. And what I say is keep it professional, because unless you're just a one-off applicant who's just going to make that one application to that planning authority, if you don't keep it professional, they will remember you the next time you come along. It is a difficult balancing act that they have to perform, and you have to recognise that that is their remit. They are not there to take sides, although it may appear that they are, when they effectively voice the views of competing parties and interests. And I think you will build a better rapport with the planning authority if you keep it professional. Everybody recognises that there are competing interests. So, you know, that's why I say my top tip, unless you are just the one-off applicant, is to keep it professional, because the officers and members, the councillors, all appreciate people who come into it in a professional manner. They all have a job to do, and it is a job that those officers are doing, as are the professionals. And that within the remit of everybody getting quite excitable, depending on how contentious a scheme can be.
Your second tip then is to listen carefully to what officers say. I suppose that's something that might sound obvious, but what does that mean in practice?
Well, within that, what we've just been discussing in terms of the whole balance that the officers and the councillors are all trying to achieve, they all work within the framework of everything being recorded, everything is sent by emails, council's committees and meetings are recorded, officers take notes of meetings, all of which are disclosable under the Freedom of Information Act. And it's not to say that that's not the right thing to do, but within that framework, with officers knowing that everything they say will get quoted back and potentially used against them, the contentious applications can be quite difficult for them to deal with. And it is really the very contentious applications that you need to worry about these things over. The straightforward ones tend not to be that complicated. And the reason I say is you have to listen carefully what the officers say is as much about what they don't say So, you know, they will say, well, this is the policy, these are the grounds. You might have a good case or you might have a bad case. But quite often they won't actually tell you. Or if you listen very carefully, you can see that the officers are nudging you in a particular direction, which they can't necessarily openly tell you either in print or even, you know, expressly tell you. So if you have suggestions in terms of a scheme and it's a contentious scheme and changes need to be made, or you feel that changes need to be made, the way to identify those changes is to listen to what the officers are saying and not saying in response to your questions and discussions, so that you can identify those areas which they might struggle to openly tell you about. And it should help you to identify, you know, how successful your scheme will be. The other thing that can be quite difficult is that I used to work in local government as an in-house lawyer, and one of the things that would happen is that almost immediately before committee, when an application is being considered, quite often a couple of hours before committee or the day before, all the officers and the chairman and the deputy chairman of the committee would sit down and go through the committee papers. And sometimes it is only at that point in time that the officers become aware whether an application is really contentious, which might appear staggering for those who don't know the system, but they have an awful lot of applications that go through the system. Not all of them are overtly contested against. A lot of people might just go to their local ward councillors, or the local ward councillors may have been appointed, you know, and they might have had a cause when they were fighting their local elections, and they might have said, well, actually, I'm going to make sure we get a village hall. So when a suitable scheme comes up, they might see the opportunity there, and you as an applicant and also the officers might have no idea of that until a scheme comes along. And then, you know, the local councillors, through the chair and the vice chair, will say, well, you know, that's not a scheme that's going to go through on whatever basis. And sometimes that can result in the applicant being asked to pull their application or being asked to extend time for the determination of their application, so that the officers can then go back to the applicant to say, you know, something's happened which we weren't really quite expecting. Would you agree to an extension? Now, at that point in time, as an applicant and as a professional, with all the other pressures that go into putting an application in and getting your consent, there tend to be a lot of factors on all sides. So for an applicant or a developer, it may be that their option's about to expire, so it might not be convenient to agree to an extension, especially if it's taken a long time. But sometimes it's important to know that your application is going to get refused otherwise, unless you pull it at that stage right at the last minute. And then, of course, the subsequent discussions might give you an idea as to why your application, which has appeared to be perfectly fine, has suddenly been pulled, or you've been asked to agree to be pulled, otherwise it could be refused. So I say listen to what they have to say, and sometimes it can be very frustrating because it can be right at the last minute, especially after lengthy discussions.
Your third tip then breaks down into a number of practical steps that an applicant can take to maximise their success. Do you want to expand a little bit on what those are?
My experiences have really almost been what I have learnt from my clients who have put in applications, and seeing those who have been incredibly successful against those who are averagely so and less so. And those that I have seen over the years as being incredibly successful sort of stick out, you know, in your experience. You think, wow, that individual, when you compare them to all the others, appeared to have the knack of getting their applications through. And if you've been involved in it throughout, you can see what they've done. And, you know, I've had a few clients over time who have been you know, particularly notable in that regard. And one that I don't think I'll ever forget, dealt with him for years. He knew the system really well. He knew the pressures that local authorities worked under. He knew the tools that were available to him to try and get schemes through. He knew how the system worked. And what I mean by that is that he knew both how to use consultants in terms of putting appropriate applications in and the right people. He knew how the political system worked. And he didn't necessarily know it. He obviously learnt it over time, but he knew which resources to deploy. And that was more really what was interesting. He would know when to go to a political consultant to find out whether there were issues at hand, what those issues might be, and what he could offer. Equally, he would use perhaps local planning consultants who he knew were well regarded and well thought of in a particular authority area. He would use the legal tools, and as I was quite often involved, because he knew that actually you can use the legal process to support an application rather than fight it. And sometimes it wasn't a case that he was particularly offering a great deal. It was just that he knew that if he set it up right from the word go and he said, right, I can see your concerns will be X, Y, and Z. I can see you want a wooden trim trail going through our landscaping scheme. That's not a problem. Yes, we'll pay for it and we'll enter into an agreement and our lawyers will draft it. They're right here. You know, right from the word go, he would introduce us, take us all along. And sometimes I would sit there and I would think, wow, he's got 6, 7, 8 consultants, including lawyers, round the table from the word go. You know, that must cost him a great deal of money. But actually, as time went on, I noticed that actually what he managed to do was he would get all the parties on side. The authorities would know they were serious about their scheme. And he would get his schemes through. Because actually, ultimately, whilst time is an issue and having meetings and discussions help that process, ultimately, applicants want their approval. That's what they want. That's why they're giving it. So I say understand, when I say understand the system and understand how it works, it's really understand all the people that go into the decision-making process, be it part of the authority or be it part of your own organisation, or be external consultants, you know, try and work out which of those elements best support your particular application. And it's not appropriate for all applications, obviously, but being able to do that and knowing what persuades planning authorities is, I think, really the critical thing in terms of maximising your chances.
Your fourth tip then relates to the ability to be able to work with a range of people. I mean, we've touched on the various stakeholders involved in the application. I guess that sort of interpersonal skill is fundamental to many professions. Why exactly is it so critical here?
Right. Well, when it comes to the planning process, you have the whole range. You have the range from what you call the NIMBYs, who, it won't matter what you suggest, do not want a particular scheme on a particular plot. Then you have the irrational. I say irrational. There are plenty of irrational human beings out there. They quite often form the parties who object to schemes. And I say irrational in the sense that they don't have a particular interest in schemes or the development of their areas. They want their areas kept as it is, and it won't matter what you offer them. But they are still part of the consultation exercise. They're still part of the decision-making framework. They are the people who will write. And you will get the perfectly normal people who might not like it, but equally can understand that there are competing interests, so you will get those. That, together with local councillors, is a particularly different breed. So when you're not in the public sector environment, you never really deal generally in your professional capacity with people who are concerned about what's going to happen behind their garden, and equally you tend not to be concerned at the political, sort of the small political level, with councillors who can equally be, you know, erratic from time to time or self-serving depending on what their cause is. So when I say a range of people, you really do see the whole range of human beings when you come to deal with any kind of a medium to a large size scheme. And then you get, as you say, everybody else that you would normally deal with in your professional capacity. So your professionals, and within that I count planning officers as professionals. They're RTPI members, they're educated, they have qualifications, they are working in a professional capacity. So other than the fact that they are accountable to their paymasters, who are not councillors as such, but they do have quite a sway over their employers being the local authority. So that does tend to affect, or can affect, how some of them behave depending on their own particular skill set and experience. So within all of that, you've got to be an incredibly tactful individual to be able to present and be able to speak at a level that is appropriate for all those people. So when you're putting in your application through the local consultation processes, you've got to be able to speak to the average Joe. You've got to be able to communicate with the parish councils. And then you've got to sensibly and professionally present to the council and councillors. And it doesn't mean that one individual does that, but it just means that if you're aware of that, you can make sure suitable individuals go before the authority in that decision-making process in order to help your cause. You know, if you can communicate with the locals and explain to them, and some authorities are very good at it. So, you know, many years ago I used to work with a local authority which was very good at consultation. So if they had a big area allocated for housing, they were incredibly good at taking their members through the buy-in process, through the local plan process. They would consult, they would give them the options and say, look, we've got to deliver 1,000 homes, whatever it might be, in our next plan area. This is the map of our local authority area. The options in terms of where these homes can go are the following. You can split them between 50 homes here, 250 homes here, 500 homes there, wherever you want. These are your various options. They're all competing options. You might not like them, but we as a public authority have to deliver these homes. Where do you want them? And as a consequence, because their consultation process was very good, they would take their members right from the beginning and get their buy-in, because the members would vote on those and they would understand that, yes, there is a trade-off. We've got to have this housing somewhere. It may not be something that's acceptable to locals and whatever have you. And then the buy-in to support that through as and when it then resulted in applications over time. So all of that, I say, you know, the ability to communicate across, and also sometimes planning authorities are very good at it, and where the planning authorities are not very good at it and you're aware of it, you as the developer has to plug that gap effectively. Because if you don't, it is quite easy for information to get out which isn't necessarily accurate or properly reflects what the scheme is and what it will do. So all of that means that, you know, when the applications go in, you've got to work out a method of being able to communicate with all of the stakeholders and the participants in the process.
And finally, your last tip is really to be persistent. Why is that so important?
I suppose those who've been involved in the planning process, I mean, despite all my tips as to how you maximise the chances of success, the reality is it is outside your control. It is a political process. It is not yet in a regulatory format. And it is always difficult to know who really calls the shots. You know, sometimes it's the ward councillors, sometimes it's the leader of the council, sometimes it's the chief exec, and sometimes it may just be somebody who lives next door who has a particular sway with somebody. And all of that means that you can put in your sterling application, you could have done all your work in terms of laying all the groundwork, and you've put all the right people and you've communicated all the right information, and you may still find that 9 months, a year, 18 months later, you've put in your scheme, and either the officer the day before, because he's gone to this discussion pre-committee, been told this is not going to be approved, and the officer has indicated to you as the applicant it's down for approval, it should be approved, phones you up to say you're going to have to extend time or suspend or whatever. And you may decide after 18 months of negotiations, well, actually, enough's enough. You know, I'm not going to give you any further extensions. You can either refuse. And sometimes that is a tool, and it's a fantastic tool to be used, because, sadly, local government is under huge amounts of financial pressures. The officers are under a huge amount of resourcing difficulties, never mind any political issues that there may be with your scheme. And all of that means that the decisions are not always a decision that should hold. And that follows through when you look at appeals, the number of appeals that are successful when they go to inquiry. They tend to be more successful than when they're done through written reps, because the evidence is then fought out. And part of the answer to all of that is persistence. So one of the it's not one that's favoured by many people because it's expensive, but one of the ways of making sure that your schemes go through, especially the contentious ones where you've worked hard at it, there's no obvious reason why it shouldn't be approved, but it still isn't approved. And one of the ways to do it is to put in your duplicate applications. You put in two applications, it's called twin tracking. You push one through, see where it gets to, and if the authority is not prepared to give you consent, you appeal the refusal or the non-determination. You leave the other one on the table for the authority when, you know, everybody's calmed down a bit to reconsider. And sadly, in many cases, you might actually have to do not only one set of those, but two, three or four sets of those with amendments to the scheme if you think there are bits of it in terms of concerns which may be valid or concerns which you could deal with without it really, you know, and still make your scheme deliverable and you're happy to deliver. So persistence, I say, pays in so many different ways when it comes to planning. So there is that aspect of it, which is quite legalistic and costly. The other, I would say, is this example of one of the most successful people that I came across in terms of getting his application through. He was hugely persistent. He'd be persistent with all his consultants, but equally he was persistent with the planning authority. He wouldn't take no for an answer. So he would say to them, right, I want a meeting, and I want it. And many, many authorities, and with many clients, we find that they say, well, we've asked for a meeting, and they won't give it to us. But he was very successful at getting those, because he'd also got the rapport, he'd identified consultants and advisors, which all gave him avenues into the planning authority and before them. And he was just hugely persistent. He would sit there and he would actually sit at the council offices. He would program his way in to be sat at the council offices at 9 o'clock on a Monday morning or a Friday morning or a Thursday morning and say, I am sat in your reception. I would like to see a planning officer. And when you're at somebody's door and the officers are in, they generally will see you. And he would do that. And yes, sometimes, I'm sure there were many times he would waste his time, but they would also know that he would do that. And in order to get rid of him as much as anything else, they would give him the time of day. But you see, a lot of people won't go to that much trouble in order to progress their applications. Mm. So that's why I say persistent pays.
Jay, that's a very comprehensive look at some of the tactics and negotiation that goes on during the planning permission process, and I'm sure hugely helpful as a steer for people just looking at that. Thank you very much indeed for your time. You've been listening to Bricks and Mortar. For more information on developing a career in real estate, see egi.co.uk and the archive of the Bricks and Mortar series at podbean.com.